welcome to this week's recording of the local news brought to you by the Equipment Services for the Blind and the Worcester News. Our service is free, but if you'd like to make a donation towards the running cost, or if you have any comments about our service, please leave a note in your wallet or ring us here at Colin Chance House. There isn't always anyone in the office, but leave a message and someone will return your call as soon as they can. I'm Sally, and Rhianne, Ian and Margaret are reading with me, and Michael is our sound engineer. Also thanks to Carol's team for all the admin and copying that happened afterwards. We'll be featuring the news from Friday the 1st of March until Thursday the 7th of March. We will include headline stories and then a variety of news items from the local area, finishing with some sporting items. The obituaries will follow the closing music for those who wish to hear them. Now over to Ian for the thought for the week.
The thought for the week is taken from Luke chapter 19, verses 37 to 40. When he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all the miracles they had seen. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples." "I tell you," he replied, "if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out." Now, there aren't any birthdays to read out this week, but if anybody has birthdays, just a reminder to let us know their name and date of birth, and of course we'd be delighted to read them.
And here are some useful telephone numbers, starting with the Worcester Talking News, which is here, 01905 767 66. Police non-emergency, 101. NHS Direct, 111. Out of hours medical assistance, that's between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. 0300 123 3211. Crime Stoppers, 0800 555 111. Community Risk Team, which is for fire safety, 0800 032 1155. Domestic Abuse Helpline, 0800 980 3331. Worcestershire County Council, the Here to Help number is 01905 768 053, and there you request option 3. The Worcester Hub is 01905 765 765, and Samaritans, a free phone number, 116 123. The theatres, Worcester Theatres box office, 01905 611 427. Morven Theatre box office, 01684 892 277. Norbury Theatre, Droitwich box office, 01905 770154. And number 8 Theatre, which is the Pershaw box office, 01386 555 488. And the National Grid, which was formerly Western Power, telephone number 0800 917 7953, and that is a 24-hour service. And the, in the event of a power cut, there is a priority service register free number, 0800 032 8302. And they will provide information in Braille or large print or alternative languages.
And now a roundup of what's on in the forthcoming weeks in the local area. The Midland Concert Orchestra will be performing music from the Great American Songbook on Sunday the 24th of March at 7pm at the Swan Theatre, Worcester. And tickets are between £5 and £15. Next week at Malvern Theatres, a cornerstone of modern musical theatre and one of the very greatest stage satires, Oh, What a Lovely War, is on. It's an extraordinary theatrical journey bringing to life the folly, farce and tragedy of the First World War. And that's on at Malvern Festival Theatre from Tuesday the 12th to Saturday the 16th of March. The Wednesday matinee performance of What a Lovely War will be audio described and will be preceded by a touch tour. Also at Malvern is the International Concert Series on Friday, March the 15th. The BBC Philharmonic is performing Elgar's Cello Concerto and also Haydn's Symphony No. 53 and Beethoven's Symphony No. 4. And that's on Friday the 15th of March at 7:30. Tickets are between £28 and £39. In Worcester, the Swan Theatre, St Richard's Hospice are presenting This Is Queen on Friday the 15th of March at 7:30. Tickets are £29.50. This is a tribute band and all funds raised after costs support the care provided by St Richard's Hospice across Worcestershire. And also at the Cathedral on Saturday, March the 16th at 7:30, the West Midlands leading large classical choir will perform a Beethoven masterpiece. The concert, organised by Worcester Festival Choral Society, will feature Beethoven's choral composition, Mass in C, and a cantata from award-winning British composer Richard Blackford, known as Mirror of Perfection. The performance will start at 7:30pm on Saturday, March the 16th. The ensemble boasts of around 180 performers, including a choir of 140 voices, a 33-piece orchestra, and several celebrated soloists. On top of the concert, attendees are also invited to a pre-concert talk held by Blackford himself. He will be discussing his work from 4:45pm to 5:20pm in the Cathedral's Chapter House. Anyone attending the talk will be treated to a complimentary drink. To reserve your place at Richard Blackford's pre-concert talk, you can email tickets at wfcs.online by Wednesday, March the 13th. And you can purchase concert tickets at www.wfcs.online or by phoning Ticket Source on 0333 666 3366.
Thank you, Rhian. And now we go to the headline stories, starting with Friday, March the 1st. Missing teen found. Relief as girl 14 is safe and well. There was a relief last night after a missing teenager was found safe and well. The girl's disappearance had caused widespread concern in the city after she went missing on Monday night. However, just an hour after police issued CCTV allegedly showing the girl wheeling a bicycle along Nunnery Lane in the city, news came through that she had been found. The teenager went missing from Newtown Road at around 10:30pm on Monday night. With police becoming increasingly concerned for her welfare, posters were put out across the city appealing for information. Last night, West Mercia Police thanked the public for their help. Detective Inspector Edward Jones said, "This incident was understandably of real concern to the family, friends and local community. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the public and media for sharing our appeals to help us locate the missing teenager safe and well." On Wednesday, the girl's mother shared Worcester News appeal on Facebook. She said, "We are approaching 48 hours now. Someone has to have seen or spoken to her. Help bring our baby home. We are worried, sick, and can't rest until she's home." Any information, call us or the police. Any information is welcome, even if you think it's small. It could help us a lot. Social media appeals had received a huge number of responses over the past few days offering help. Missing person posters were put up across city centre businesses, including at Worcester Foregate Street railway station and McDonald's in the Cross, to raise awareness among the public. One person wrote, "Can we help? Is there any sort of search that can be joined? Our hearts go out to her parents. I hope she's found safe and well."
The headline story for Saturday and Sunday, March the 2nd and 3rd, follows on from the same item. Mum eternally grateful to City. A mother has spoken of her eternal thanks to everyone who helped bring her baby home. Emily Ramage said she would like to thank everyone who helped find her daughter, Elisa, who had been missing from Worcester for more than 3 days. Residents across Worcestershire and emergency services had banded together to help find the 14-year-old who had gone missing from Newtown Road on Monday night, February the 26th. Missing person posters had appeared across the city centre businesses' windows, including at Foregate Street Station and McDonald's in the Cross, to raise awareness amongst the public. Speaking to Worcester News, Emily Ramage said, "Worcester really pulled together and helped me and Luke get our baby home, and we are eternally grateful. Thank you for Worcester News's help as well. You have been fantastic." Police had 47 volunteers from West Mercia Police Search and Rescue on the ground to find Elisa, and their colleagues from Cheshire Search and Rescue had joined in on the search. A spokesperson for West Mercia Police Dog said, "This is great news, and special thanks to the 47 volunteers from West Mercia Police Search and Rescue and their colleagues from Cheshire Search and Rescue who carried out searches for this missing child." People across Worcestershire had shared the missing person appeal far and wide in a bid to find Elisa. Acting Detective Inspector Ed Jones said, "This incident was understandably of real concern to the family, friends and local community. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the public and media for sharing our appeals to help us locate the missing teenager safe and well." Worcester News readers shared their relief after Elisa was found on our Facebook page. Isabel McGoban said, "Thank God she has been found and safe. It makes me sick to my stomach always hearing stories about kids going missing. I can't even imagine what her family has been through. So happy for her and her family." Selena Melichap posted, "I have non-stop thought about this. So relieved she is safe and well."
And this is the headline for Monday, March the 4th. Under the headline, "Murder Probe. Tributes to a woman found dead as a second fights for her life and a man helps police with their inquiries." A man has been arrested on suspicion of murder and attempted murder after a woman was found dead in a quiet Worcester street while a second was left fighting for her life. Tributes were paid to Wendy Francis, 61, after her body was found in a house in Caresfield Close, Warndon. A second woman, aged 38, had life-threatening injuries. A man, aged 50, is being questioned. As neighbours reeled in shock, Wendy's family said, "Wendy will be hugely missed. She was one in a million and much loved." And under heading Tributes to a One in a Million Woman, it reads, "Tributes have been paid to a one-in-a-million woman who was found dead in a quiet residential city road as a murder probe has been launched. The family of Wendy Francis, aged 61, said Wendy will be hugely missed. She was one in a million and much loved. She died in Halesfield Close, Warndon, on Saturday night. A 38-year-old woman is in a stable condition in hospital, and a 50-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of murder and attempted murder. Neighbours have spoken of the scary moment police swooped into their quiet residential road after Wendy died. Andrew Fowler has lived in the cul-de-sac his whole life and said the street has always been quiet. I was in bed and at about 7:45 p.m. I saw all the lights flashing from my window and I had a look. And there was an ambulance and police and they were holding blankets out as they were obviously working on someone, he said. It was scary and I didn't know what was going on. When you all live in the same street, it is not a very nice thing. This is a good street. It's always been a good street. I knew the family well, and they are all good people. They were a lovely family. A large emergency service presence was seen on the residential road last night following the death of the woman. The second woman was found with life-threatening injuries. Another neighbour, who did not want to be named, said, I never expected something like this to happen. I've lived here for 42 years and walk around the estate with my dog. I've not heard anyone say it's a bad area. It's a quiet street. You see the occasional beer can on the floor, but I don't get it, to be honest. It is totally out of character. One resident who was watching TV at the time said he saw the blue flashing lights shine through his living room window. He said he was shocked to discover someone had died. Detective Chief Inspector Leighton Harding of the Murder Investigation Unit said, I understand that incidents of this nature can be alarming, but I would like to reassure the local community that this was an isolated incident and there is no wider risk to the public.
Following on from Monday's headline, on Tuesday, March the 5th, the headline reads, Man Charged with Murder. A man accused of the murder of a 61-year-old woman and attempted murder of another woman has appeared in court. Damien Homer of Haresfield Close in Warnden, Worcester, did not enter a plea when he appeared at Kidderminster Magistrates Court yesterday. Homer is accused of the murder of Wendy Francis and the attempted murder of Stacey Hill. The 50-year-old, who wore a grey jumper, confirmed his name and date of birth at the start of the hearing in Courtroom 1. During a short hearing, magistrates sent the case to the higher court. Lauren Millichip appeared for the prosecution with Aimer Hussein defending. Homer, who was remanded in custody, was told by magistrates the next hearing of the case would take place at Warwick Crown Court on Tuesday, March the 5th. The charges are in relation to the death of Wendy Francis at an address in Haresfield Close, Warnden, Worcester, on Saturday night, March the 2nd. A second woman, aged 38, was taken to hospital in the incident. Her condition has been described by the force as now stable and she continues to receive medical treatment. In a statement, Wendy's family said, Wendy will be hugely missed. She was one in a million and much loved. The court appearance took place after West Mercia Police released a statement saying Homer had been charged on Monday morning. A spokesperson for West Mercia Police previously said, although formal identification has yet to take place with permission of the family, we are able to confirm that Wendy Francis, aged 61, sadly lost her life in the incident which is being investigated by West Mercia Police. Detective Chief Inspector Leighton Harding of the Murder Investigation Unit said, I understand that incidents of this nature can be alarming, but I would like to reassure the local community that this was an isolated incident and there is no wider risk to the public. You will notice a higher police presence in the area in the coming days as officers investigate this incident. Our thoughts are with the family of the woman who has sadly lost her life.
And Wednesday, March the 6th, the headlines, Worries Over Family Found Living in Tent. A family found living in a tent in a Worcester park is now in temporary accommodation with support from the city's homelessness charities. The large grey tent is pitched up near trees on Pitmarston Park in Malvern Road, St John's. People were concerned for the welfare of the family, with some contacting the police and the city's MP, Robin Walker, in an attempt to find them support. It is not known who the family are, how many children they have, or how they came to be living in the tent. A Worcester News reporter visited the tent, but nobody was inside when we attempted to make contact. Park users said they spotted the tent pitched at Pitmaston last week and have been concerned for the family. West Mercia Police said apart from one of his team based in that area being notified about the tent, it had received no further information. Mags Day Centre, a Worcester-based charity supporting people who are homeless and vulnerable, said it was aware of the matter and was working with the family to reach a solution. A spokesperson for Mags Day Centre said, "The individuals are known to Mags and are working closely with us and other relevant agencies at present to reach the best suitable solution for them." Worcestershire Children's First was another agency working with the family, revealing it had provided them with accommodation since the case was brought to their attention. A spokesperson for Worcestershire Children First said, "The family's situation has very recently been shared with Children's Services and we have been supporting the family with accommodation since. Therefore, there is no reason for them to be living in the park. Children's Services continue to work with partner agencies to address the family and address their situation at this time." According to Homeless Charity Shelter, families with dependent children living with them or who might reasonably be expected to live with them are given priority. It can include 18-year-olds who are in full-time education and are still dependent on the person applying as homeless.
And lastly, the headline story for Thursday, March the 7th. Fatal crash fears over A&E parking. Plea for double yellow lines. Angry neighbours are calling for double yellow lines before someone is killed after a head-on crash was blamed on parking problems spilling over from a new hospital A&E opened opposite. Residents of Oakmont Drive off Newtown Road say people regularly park on the dangerous road since the new A&E opened at Worcestershire Royal Hospital last October. People living in the new Stableford development have described having to reverse onto Newtown Road because of the junction parking bottleneck. Some have taken it upon themselves to put out traffic cones and have made signs to deter people from blocking the busy Newtown Road junction, but they are removed or ripped up. One woman battling cancer could not get to her hospital appointment for chemotherapy outside the city because the road was blocked by parked cars, which she described as being very stressful. Others say fire engines and larger emergency vehicles would not be able to get down Oakmont Drive because of the parking. Eleanor McCulloch, 31, of Oakmont Drive, a mum of two and paediatric registrar, said, "People also park right at the junction of Newtown Road and you have to go onto the wrong side of the road to get onto Oakmont Drive. We're really worried that someone is going to get killed. Nobody is doing anything about it." She said one of her neighbours was assaulted when they asked a woman to move her car to allow fire engines and ambulances to get through. However, because the road is unadopted, Worcestershire County Council cannot introduce yellow lines or other parking restrictions. Meanwhile, residents say Elan Homes, which built the new estate, is not aware of a time frame for the road to be adopted. A spokesperson for Elan urged people to call police. Colin Jones, 69, of Oakmont Drive, said, "The parking is horrendous. We tell people, can you move your car? But they get quite bolshy about it, so you don't say anything. Since the A&E opened, the parking here has gone ballistic." A spokesperson for Worcestershire County Council said, "Oakmont Drive is a privately maintained access road. A public bridleway runs concurrently with the road, but the parking has no impact on its use." Elan Regional Manager Jeremy Atwater said, "The layout of the roads at our Stableford development was designed in consultation with and approved by the local authority. While we understand residents' concern and frustrations about parking, we are unable to implement measures to restrict parking in the area. If a vehicle is parked dangerously or in a way that would prevent emergency vehicle access, this should be reported to the police. The process of the roads becoming adopted is due to be completed soon. Residents will then have the opportunity to liaise directly with the Highways Authority regarding any concerns or queries.
Queen Camilla is coming to Worcester Cathedral, where she will distribute gifts to exemplary individuals on behalf of the King. Her Royal Highness, the Queen, is coming to the Cathedral on Thursday, March the 28th, for the annual Royal Maunday service, distribution of Royal Maunday gifts on behalf of His Majesty the King. Ceremonial coins will be presented to 75 men and 75 women from around the country, including 39 people from the diocese covering Worcestershire and Dudley. The gift is presented in recognition of their exemplary Christian service to church and community over many years. The tradition of presenting alms on Maundy Thursday goes back to at least the 4th century, and in this country the first record of the Maundy doing it is in 1213. The monarch doing it, rather, sorry. In recent times, it has been the tradition for the service to travel to different cathedrals, and it last took place in Worcester in 1980. The service last year was attended by the King and Queen and was held at York Minster. The number of men and women receiving the Maundy money is equivalent to the monarch's age. For the purpose of the service, our cathedral will become a chapel royal, with a chapel royal choir singing alongside the cathedral choir. As Lord High Almoner, Bishop John, will accompany Her Majesty the Queen as she presents the gifts. He said, "It is an honour to be able to welcome Her Majesty the Queen, and this is an immensely special service, and I know it will mean a huge amount to those who have been chosen to receive the coins, all of whom will have given years of service to their local communities." Worcester Cathedral's interim dean, Canon Stephen Edwards, said, "We are delighted that Worcester has been chosen as the location for this year's Maundy service. We will be pulling out all the stops to create a special occasion for all the recipients. The Maundy service will take place in the morning and will be attended by invited representatives from across the diocese and county, including the recipients and their guests. The word Maundy comes from the Latin word meaning commandment. It was on this Thursday, the day before he died, that Jesus gave his disciples what he described as a new commandment, that you should love one another as I have loved you."
40 penguin chicks are winging their way to schools and community groups as Worcester gears up for its third major public art trail this summer. St Richard's Hospice will bring 80 beautifully decorated penguin sculptures to the city's streets and public places this July, with 40 babies designed by local youngsters and group members. The Great Waddle of Worcester follows on from hugely successful giraffe and elephant trails in 2018 and 2021, also led by the Worcestershire-based charity. Currently, each penguin chick is a blank canvas. Once transformed, their dazzling designs will be displayed in city shop windows and at Crowngate Shopping Centre during the 8-week trail before being returned to their creators as a lasting memory of the project. Taking part in its first art trail is Flyford Flavel Primary School, with its participation kindly sponsored by accountancy practice PSG Bowdens in Evesham. Rosalind Bennett, head teacher at the school, said, "It's fair to say that everyone in the school community, from preschool age right up to our staff, is extremely excited to be part of the Great Waddle. Having watched the previous giraffe and elephant trails unfold with great wonder, it will be fantastic to have our own penguin who will come back to join the school family next autumn. We would like to thank everyone at PSG Bowdens for helping us take part. Tanya Jones, partner at PSG Bowdens Accountants, Tax and Business Advisors, said, "We're very proud to be sponsoring a baby penguin, meaning that children from Fryford Flavel Primary can waddle in Worcester. We're sure the experience of designing, decorating and then seeing their work of art on display in the city is one which will live on in the memories of pupils and their families for years to come. The Great Waddle of Worcester is supported by community and education partner Worcester BID. Sam McCarthy, Chief Executive of Worcester BID, said, "The Great Waddle is such a brilliant opportunity for local schools and groups to be a part of something really special. Once again, Worcester will be transformed into a fun, free art space this summer, with thousands of people enjoying the creative talents of local young people and community group members. The Waddle will run from Monday, July the 22nd, until Sunday, September the 15th. In October, each large penguin sculpture will be auctioned off to raise funds for the care provided by the hospice to patients living with a serious progressive illness and their loved ones. One large penguin is still available for sponsorship. To get involved, call Sarah Matthews, Business Development Manager, on 01905 763 963 or email smatthews@strichards.org.uk. People can follow the Great Waddle of Worcester on Facebook, X and Instagram or at www.waddleofworcester.co.uk.
The fire service has urged people to make testing their smoke alarms as part of their routine. As part of the Fire Kills campaign, Hereford and Worcester Fire and Rescue Service stress the importance of alarms which can provide the critical extra seconds needed to escape a fire. HWFRS said many homeowners are unaware that the average lifespan of a smoke alarm is only 10 years. It says that a weekly test could make all the difference, coupled with ensuring that at least there's at least one smoke alarm on every level of the home. Changing batteries every year, never removing the smoke alarm, and checking the fitting spaces are also part of the advice. Emma Roberts, Head of Prevention for HWFRS, said, "Smoke alarms can offer vital protection for you and your loved ones, but most people simply fit and forget. They don't know if it might be coming to the end of its lifespan or not working at all. So, if your alarm is getting past its best or your top floor is missing an alarm of its own, fit new ones, test them at least once a week and protect your loved ones."
The city's newest bridge has begun to take shape as important sections are being put into place. The multi-million pound Keepax Bridge project in Gelleveld Park will see a new walking and cycling bridge reach from Gelleveld Park to the former Keepax landfill site in Worcester. A new picture published by Worcestershire County Council shows one of the main segments of the bridge being lifted into place. Work on the main part of the bridge started last month, as work up to then had focused on the bridge's structural bases and foundations. A spokesperson for Worcestershire County Council said, "The new sections of the Keepax bridge deck have been lifted into place. Four sections have been installed on the west side of the river by a 350-ton crane. This stage of the bridge building process involves complex lifting arrangements with up to three cranes working simultaneously to place each part. A lead crane will lift and support deck sections into place, and tailing cranes will lift cable stays that will carry the forces and support the deck sections as they span the river. Barges are then set to be put in the river and fitted with elevated working platforms on which operatives will work to gain access to the bridge deck sections being lifted over the river. Following the completion of bridge lifts, tipper trucks will remove the stone used to construct crane pads from the site in preparation for landscaping. The new bridge came after the council was told it could not be trusted to use the money for walking and cycling correctly until it improved as part of a zero rating by government body Active Travel England. The rating was given to the council for not even meeting the minimum standards of political leadership on boosting walking and cycling in the county and for its lacklustre track record of providing improvements. The bridge project is expected to be completed this year.
A white van driver caused widespread disruption while the vehicle was abandoned on railway tracks in Worcester, causing trains to be cancelled. The white van was pictured on the railway viaduct over the River Severn in Worcester after it was driven onto the line at Worcester Foregate Street station in the early hours of March the 4th. No arrests have yet been made in connection with the incident, but commuters faced hours of disruption as train services had to be cancelled until the van was removed. Workers in high-vis jackets could be seen making investigations and examining the tracks before the vehicle was eventually removed. A spokesperson for Worcester Midlands Railway said at the time of the incident, due to a road vehicle blocking the railway between Worcester Shrub Hill and Hereford services running through these stations, may be cancelled or delayed. Road transport has been arranged to run between Worcester stations and Hereford in both directions. However, it was announced earlier on Monday afternoon that the track had been reopened and services had resumed. Safety checks had to be performed before the lines could reopen. The spokesperson for British Transport Police said officers were called shortly before 4 a.m. on March the 4th to reports of a vehicle on the tracks between Henrik Road, Worcester, on the tracks near Henrik Road, Worcester, rather. British Transport Police are continuing to investigate the incident and will work with colleagues at West Mercia Police. A Network Rail spokesman said, in the early hours of Monday, March the 4th, Network Rail were made aware of a van that had entered onto the railway track at Worcester Foregate Street. We had to close the line between Worcester and Hereford while our engineers worked as quickly as possible to remove the van and make the necessary safety checks before reopening the line. We apologise for delays to journeys and appreciate everyone's patience while we removed the obstruction.
The partial collapse of a medieval bridge was not caused by the removal of a weir to help migrating fish, said environmental chiefs. Powick Old Bridge, near Worcester, suffered a partial collapse at the end of January, with some critics blaming the removal of a weir for the build-up of driftwood and other debris, which they said in turn damaged the structure. However, Environment Agency leaders said its removal as part of unlocking the Severn was not a factor in the accumulation of debris at the bridge, which is still closed to pedestrians and cyclists. Unlocking the Severn is a partnership project led by the Canal and River Trust with the Environment Agency, Severn Rivers Trust and Natural England to reopen the UK's longest river to all fish species. The archways of the bridge were once again on the verge of being submerged by the swollen River Teme as debris was pushed by the flood water against the structure, some near the spot where the wing wall had suffered partial collapse. County Councillor Alan Amos, in whose division the bridge sits, said, "Finding the cause of the bridge's collapse is essential if we are to make a lasting repair and to ensure no other part of the bridge has been damaged. Further technical investigation has established that the probable cause was the Environmental Agency's removal of a weir upstream, which allowed water to reach the bridge much faster and previously trapped debris to flow down in greater quantities at a faster speed, causing a scouring effect on the bridge. The County Council has now asked to see what advice the Environment Agency's risk assessment gave about the consequences for the bridge of their decision to remove the weir just so fish could swim up the river the wrong way, or whether no advice was given. The County Council will then decide what action to take. A spokesperson for the Environment Agency said the weir was removed by the Unlocking the Severn project to allow the easier migration of the shad fish along the River Teme. Removal of the weir will not have increased the amount of debris against Powick Bridge or the rate it was flowing. That is dictated by the amount of debris washed into the river and the velocity of the watercourse at times of flood. This will vary from flood to flood and is a natural occurrence. Riparian owners have rights and responsibilities when it comes to keeping rivers clear, including maintaining the bed and banks of the watercourse and keeping the banks clear of anything that could cause an obstruction and increase flood risk, either on their land or downstream if it is washed away. The Environment Agency does carry out some annual maintenance and clearance work using its permissive powers to keep water flowing. In some cases, this includes removal of debris that may pose a flood risk to people and property. The Worcester News has approached Worcestershire County Council for a comment.
A group of 100 women from Worcester will pedal forward in recognition of International Women's Day on Friday, March the 8th. Bike Worcester, a community group focused on making it easier and safer for people to cycle in the city, will be marking the day by encouraging more women to take up cycling for a variety of reasons: commuting, school runs, sport, leisure, or simple pleasure. The concept was born out of the recognition of two Worcester women, Katie Collier and Georgie Tucker, who were both included in the Top 100 Women in Cycling national list by Cycling UK last year. Inspired by this, Bike Worcester set a challenge to find 100 women in the community who love to cycle and to share their unique and inspiring stories. The participating women have filled out a short survey discussing their cycling habits, favourite routes, challenges they've overcome, and tips for aspiring cyclists. Their stories will be displayed in a photo montage and on Bike Worcester's website in honour of International Women's Day. Beck Baker, one of the participants, rekindled her childhood love for cycling in her late 20s. She said, "I have struggled with mental health issues my whole teenage and young adult life, but cycling has been a wonder drug. Since I have built cycling into my daily commute, my health has improved significantly." Fiona Blake, project lead for Bike Worcester, said, "This collection of stories in the start of our alignment with International Women's Day. Our plan throughout 2024 is to connect with all the women currently cycling in the city and to hear about their experiences. The group will lead out the critical mass slow bike ride around the city on Saturday, March the 16th, which all women are welcome to join."
A beloved postmaster who spent 10 years working in Worcester has recently retired. Alan Beasley, widely respected by the community, had spent a decade as a Worcester postmaster at the Cherry Orchard branch before taking the helm at the Crabs Cross post office near Redditch for 25 years. Mr. Beasley's devotion to his job is evidenced by the fact he missed just one workday in 35 years due to illness. He said, "I took to the role of postmaster like a duck to water. I have really loved being a postmaster. I have prided myself in running a good office. I like to help people. I'm a people person, and I get great satisfaction in helping people, especially the vulnerable." He added, "I love retail and building up rapport with customers. I am really going to miss serving my customers. They are sad that I am leaving, but relieved that new retailers will take over the post office." His father, Edward Allen, affectionately known as Old Allen, was also a stalwart of the post office. He was warmly referred to as Oldest Tea Boy, serving tea drinks to staff, including his son, known as Young Allen, until he was 98. Prior to passing away, just 8 days before his 100th birthday, his son had reduced his opening hours to spend time with him. Despite retiring, Mr. Beasley plans to remain active in the community. He plans to volunteer at the Salvation Army charity next door and has recently bought a motorbike. His retirement will also allow him to indulge his hobbies of fishing and golf. Matt Wilkes, Post Office Area Manager, said, "Alan has been a pillar of this community for 35 years. He has really gone above and beyond for his community, and he is very popular. I really want to thank him for his long and loyal service to the people of Crabs Cross since 1988. Crabs Cross Post Office closed temporarily on Thursday, February the 29th, and will reopen under new management on Thursday, April the 4th at 1 p.m. at Simply Fresh in Redditch.
A new CEO is at the head of a Worcester-based charity. Leukemia Care has announced the appointment of Colin Dyer as the new chief executive of Leukemia Care. The national leukemia charity, with headquarters in Blackpool, is dedicated to ensuring that anyone affected by leukemia receives the right information, advice and support. Mr. Dyer joins the charity from Special Olympics Great Britain, where he has held the post of chief executive since 2022. Prior to leading Special Olympics GB, he spent 12 years at national charity Well Child as their CEO. Chris Matthews Maxwell, chairman of the board of trustees at Leukemia Care, said the board is delighted to appoint a person of Colin's extensive and varied experience who will be joining the charity at an interesting time of its growth and development. Mr. Dyer said, "I am really looking forward to getting started and working with the team at the charity to continue the outstanding work already taking place to support those affected by leukemia. It is clear that there is a potential for Leukemia Care to continue to develop its reach and that everyone connected with the charity is determined to build on the positive impact we are having for so many people across the country. He will begin his new role on Tuesday, April the 2nd, replacing Zach Pemberton-Whiteley."
A spate of senseless vandalism that has caused significant damage to a charity building has led to a children's organisation having to pay out. Worcester Sea Cadets need money to help better secure its Diglis boating station, which has been subjected to several attacks by vandals. Extensive destruction has been caused to the building, such as broken windows, graffiti and attempted break-ins. They now want to install CCTV, security lights and fencing to deter vandals and reassure those walking by as the area is currently unlit. The Just Giving page can be found at www.justgiving.com/crowdfunding/Worcester-Sea Cadets-1. A spokesperson for the Sea Cadets said, "Recent vandalism has caused significant damage to our Diglis boating station. The perpetrators of this senseless act have caused extensive destruction, including broken windows, graffiti and attempted break-ins. This has affected the well-being and morale of those who have worked so hard to try and better themselves. Unfortunately, our organisation does not have sufficient resources to cover these expenses without assistance. Your contribution will not only repair the physical damage and improve security, but will also send out a powerful message of solidarity and resilience to the community and ensure that we can swiftly address and restore not only our facility, but keep the ever-popular historical part of Worcester a safer place. Worcester Sea Cadets has two locations, one in Diglis and another off Midland Road, which is used more out of season. The Diglis location is based on the river, so it is easier for the cadets to get onto the water during the warmer months." Denise Harvey, chair of the Worcester Sea Cadets, previously said the attack has had a knock-on effect on many other organisations who use the hall. She said, I think it is especially difficult at this, as this is a community hub that is used by a lot of different groups. So it is not just us that this kind of behaviour affects. As an organisation, we try to do a lot of good work with young people, teaching them valuable life lessons and things they can use throughout their lives. Worcester Sea Cadets was formed in 1937 and is a charity that has supported thousands of local young people aged 10 to 18. It runs various activities and aims to instil valuable life skills in its members and contribute positively to their community. Many of these ex-cadets help and support our community's next generation.
There were celebrations at the city's newest school, which wants the best for its pupils, after it received its first Ofsted rating. North Worcester Primary Academy opened officially in 2019 and is thrilled to receive its first rating. The school in John Comyn Drive was rated good by Ofsted and was praised for building positive relationships between staff and pupils. The Ofsted report said, "The school has high expectations of pupils and wants the best for them. This includes pupils with complex additional needs. Staff work diligently to tailor support to ensure all pupils achieve well. Staff are overwhelmingly positive about working at North Worcester Primary. They feel supported and valued. They feel well looked after and want to stay at the school." The report also recognised the school is new and, as it continues to grow, it would continue to build an effective partnership with parents who also share positive views of the school. Head teacher Stuart Grimes said, "This is a fantastic achievement for our school community. It is a testament to the hard work and passion everyone has in ensuring the children we serve flourish and have the very best experiences. The school is part of the Rivers C of E Academy Trust. North Worcester Primary Academy was given a few areas to improve, for example, the school's expectations of some pupils with special educational needs were too low, particularly for those who struggle to regulate their behaviour, according to inspectors. On occasion, a small number of pupils are allowed to regularly disengage from the lesson, which limits their progress. The school also needs to ensure that all leaders have the skills, knowledge and opportunity to monitor and evaluate their areas of responsibility." The Ofsted report also added, "There are some minor inconsistencies in provision in the early years, including in curriculum implementation and expectation of behaviour. This means that some children do not get off to the strongest start possible. The school could ensure a consistency of approach in the early years through regular monitoring and evaluation." The Ofsted inspected the school on February the 6th and 7th.
A Worcester family is cycling to Rome to raise funds for charity. City-born and bred Olivia Middleton and her father Keith have taken up the challenge to go from Edinburgh to the Italian capital to raise awareness of MND, motor neuron disease, and the My Name 5 Doddy Foundation. The former Scotland and British and Irish Lion rugby hero, Doddy Weir, died in 2022, having been diagnosed with MND 6 years earlier. International roaming bundle team leader Keith's riders and support are covering around 1,700 miles to Rome over 9 days. Olivia and her partner Ben Weir, Doddy's youngest son, are part of a 6-person cycle relay team who set off from Murrayfield Rugby Stadium, Edinburgh, on Wednesday, passing through Worcestershire on Thursday, on the way to the Channel Tunnel before cycling through France and Italy, ultimately arriving at the Piazza Navona, Rome. Olivia, a former Royal Grammar School Worcester pupil, met Ben while studying law at Edinburgh University. She said, "We've all been training hard for this ride, preparing ourselves both mentally and physically, but we have a great team with an incredible sense of camaraderie, which certainly helps. I've never done anything like this before, and I've been looking forward to sharing what I know is going to be a monumental challenge with both Ben and my dad." Ben said, We are part of a much bigger cycle event called All Roads Lead to Rome, organised by some of my dad's former teammates, such as Rob Wainwright, OBE. It feels great, although sometimes daunting, to be part of this huge effort to raise money to support those living with MND and perhaps bring us closer to one day finding a cure. Olivia's father, Keith, managing director of Worcester B2B telecoms provider Intelecom UK Limited, said, "We have a couple of experienced cyclists in our team, but the rest of us are just keen enthusiasts. There has been a lot of preparation for this Herculean task ahead of us, which would not be possible without the support of local businesses. We are focused on raising funds and awareness for this very worthwhile charity. The International Roaming Bundle team will meet up with 20 other teams in the centre of Rome on Friday, March the 8th, and join thousands of Scottish rugby fans as part of the Doddy March on Saturday, March the 9th, to Stadio Olimpico before watching Italy and Scotland compete in this year's Six Nations tournament. The All Roads Lead to Rome Challenge, set by Rob Wainwright, is the biggest designed by the former Scotland captain and Lion and will push the team to its limits and beyond. The team members recognise there will be times their physical and mental health will be tested over the 9 days, but they know this is nothing like the struggles those with MND live with every day and will continue to do so until a cure is found. It is made up of mixed ages and pace, and the group dodging the Alps on the route to Rome due to the potential weather conditions.
Owners of a city cake shop have shared their sadness after revealing their store has closed. Nathan Parry, who owns the little shop of cakes in St John's, said it was horrible to say goodbye, but rising costs had made it impossible for the business to make money. The previous owner, Charlotte Hancock, had opened the cake shop in September 2022, but stepped away from the store 7 months ago. "We took over the shop from the previous owner 7 months ago after she decided she no longer wanted to continue," said Mr. Parry. "As locals, we didn't want to see another independent shop close in St John's, so we stepped in with the hope that increasing and stabilising opening hours and improving community engagement might keep it going. Sadly, this hasn't worked. We have considered many options, but ultimately we are closing because we just haven't been able to make the money to continue. Rising stock, staffing and general overhead costs have made it hard for the store to make enough money to break even." And Mr. Parry said everyone is feeling the pinch. He added, "It's horrible to be saying goodbye. It was such a sweet little shop that people truly enjoyed visiting. The hardest part has been saying goodbye to the team. They have been so dedicated and worked so hard. Since revealing the closure, many customers have visited Facebook to share their sadness. The public response has been incredible, with many comments and messages giving us their best wishes and support. Loads of people sharing how much they enjoyed our cafe and how much they will miss it, which has been lovely. The store officially closed on February the 28th, and there are currently no plans for the Little Shop of Cakes' future. The Little Shop of Cakes sold a range of coffees, paninis, waffles and milkshakes, and offered both takeaway and seating options."
Work on Midlands rail links will include an additional train every hour between central Birmingham and Worcester. The first phase of the £1.75 billion Midlands Rail Hub, with an additional funding injection of £123 million, is ready to be set into motion. The project will boost rail service capacity and frequency for passengers, whilst also improving more than 50 stations across the Midlands, covering 7 million people. The plan is made possible thanks to reallocated HS2 funding. Design work on the project is now set to begin, including preparing detailed infrastructure improvement designs and finalising operating plans for the new services. Transport Secretary Mark Harper said, "Today's announcement is part of the government's plan to invest in transport projects, with reallocated HS2 funding helping to grow the economy and better connect communities across the Midlands." Andy Street, Mayor of West Midlands and Chair of the West Midlands Rail Executive, said, "Midlands Rail Hub will deliver a revolution in public transport for our region, opening up more capacity on the routes in and out of central Birmingham, which will allow us to run more services to more places, both locally and nationally. This investment will not only better connect communities to convenient and rapid public transport services, but also attract further investment into our region, delivering jobs, growth and greater prosperity." Maria Makanosis, Chief Executive of Midlands Connect, said, "This announcement marks a major milestone in this transformational, nationally significant project. The Midlands Rail Hub programme is the result of years of collaboration and determination by cross-party leaders from all corners of the Midlands. Today's £123 million announcement is a clear sign of government's trust in our partnership, getting us closer to finally delivering much-needed east-west connectivity across the region. With full delivery, the hub will increase services on most routes by between 50% and 100%. The announcement of the funding coincides with the British Business Bank's launch of its £400 million Midlands Engine Investment Fund. The closer rail links in the Midlands is expected to generate economic growth and prosperity."
The Worcester Municipal Charities has announced it will award four educational grants worth nearly £100,000 to community organisations. The organisation, established in 1559, recently had its annual meeting for 2024 and announced plans to grant a combined £86,791. Chairman Paul Griffith, MBE, explained that the proposed grants are generated from the charity's constitutional requirement to allocate 12% of its net income towards educational endeavours. Recipients of this year's grants include the Tudor House Museum, the John Palmer Educational Foundation, Dance Fest, and All Sorts of Performing Arts. Dance Fest has been allocated £20,494 specifically for dance areas in social housing sectors of Worcester. The most substantial grant, amounting to £42,944, has been designated to the Tudor House Museum to finance its two curatorial staff who, along with approximately 50 volunteers, manage it as a free entry heritage museum under the umbrella of the Worcester Heritage and Amenity Trust, WHAT. In 2008, due to financial constraints, the City Council had considered closing the museum and selling it for commercial use. However, WHAT proposed to manage the museum, and subsequently the Worcester Municipal Charity furnished initial capital to purchase a 125-year lease from the council, which has been operating for 16 years. Recognising its outstanding charitable achievements, the City Council in 2023 awarded a new 999-year lease free of charge, ensuring its continued operation. The John Palmer Educational Foundation, established in 1628 by the Worcester resident, also received a grant worth £1,120 after his will gifted £120 to the Worcester Corporation. Almost 400 years on, Worcester Municipal Charities, which inherited the grant, has given the donation back, adjusted for inflation, with interest added, which will be used to help the Suckley community. All Sorts of Performing Arts will receive £16,233 as well as a rent-free community facility valued at £6,000 annually.
Five students and a member of staff from the University of Worcester have all been shortlisted in the latest Student Nursing Times Awards. The awards pay tribute to student nurses and midwives and the programmes and people committed to providing outstanding training and educational opportunities. Kevin Fernandez, senior lecturer in adult nursing and international lead in the Three Counties School of Nursing and Midwifery at the University of Worcester, has been shortlisted in the University Educator of the Year category. Kevin joined the university 2 years ago, having previously worked as a nurse both in the Philippines and the UK. He said, "I'm really humbled to have been shortlisted in these awards. When I was a student nurse, I never thought one day I would be teaching the nurses of the future. But when I became a nurse, I loved mentoring students and knew that I wanted to share my passion with others and support them to become the best possible practitioner." Part of Kevin's role at the university is to support international nursing students in their transition, integration, and beyond. Robert Dudley, head of the Three Counties School of Nursing and Midwifery at the university, said, "Kevin is an outstanding academic practitioner and scholar. Driven by his own lived experience of moving to the UK to study and coupled with a wide range of interpersonal and communication skills, Kevin is uniquely placed to support our international students. He has a positive, nurturing and collaborative leadership approach, guiding our nursing students, many of whom are grappling with a new country, new culture, and in many instances, new way of learning. His impact is quite simply profound." Also shortlisted in the Student Nursing Times Awards are five Worcester students, including third-year student Ash Bainbridge, who is shortlisted for Student Midwife of the Year, international student Kioma Yukaria Najimaha, who is shortlisted for outstanding contribution to sustainability, fellow international student Almi Ala John, who is shortlisted for Student Nurse of the Year Clinical Research, and Julie Bayliss and Nicole Barr, who are both shortlisted for Nursing Associate Learner of the Year. Robert Dudley added, "We are thrilled to have five students shortlisted in the awards. Their outstanding commitment and dedication to the nursing and midwifery profession is clear, as is the contribution they make to communities they serve."
People who own empty homes are being asked by the council to bring them back to use as rented accommodation. Worcester City Council's plea comes as part of its ongoing initiative offering a council tax premium to discourage people from letting homes sit empty for 2 years or longer. The announcement coincides with National Empty Homes Week, a nationwide campaign highlighting the work accomplished by councils and communities. The week is dedicated to discussing strategies to bring vacant homes back into use and take action against neglected, unoccupied properties impacting neighbourhoods negatively. In an example of such actions, the council has recently enforced the sale of a neglected Chestnut Walk property. Having been vacant for over a decade, the former residence was in substantial disrepair, featuring overgrown vegetation, a hole in its roof, and alleged vermin issues. Following the landlord's failure to comply with a 2019 formal notice for repairs and cleaning, the council performed the necessary maintenance and put a land charge on the property to reclaim the costs. Significant council tax arrears led the council to force the sale of the building, successfully recovering all the owed debts. Following refurbishment, the once abandoned house is now ready for tenants. Vice Chair of the Council's Communities Committee, Councillor Neil Lawrenson thanked the involved departments for their dedication in resolving this case. He said, "Most empty properties are well maintained, but there are some exceptions. In this case, we took action to bring this neglected property back into a habitable state. It has not been an easy process, and it is a last resort, but it is important for absent owners to remember that they still have responsibilities to their neighbours and the wider community. I'd like to thank officers in our planning, legal, land charges and housing departments for working so hard to resolve this issue." Councillor Lawrenson concluded by warning of potential intervention by the council, saying, "The message is clear. If your property has a negative impact on others, then the City Council can intervene and use its available powers to remedy the situation."
The top five most populous streets in Worcester for home buyers have been revealed by a county estate agent. Prospective buyers have their sights set on many city roads and areas, with Nicol & Co revealing the most desirable locations. They said the historic county capital city is proving popular with home buyers looking to live in a great location that boasts beautiful architecture and yet is minutes from stunning countryside. Dan Westwood, sales manager at Nicol & Co Worcester's office, said it is a winning formula that is driving residential sales in 2024. "As with many cities, Worcester has streets which are recognised as the most desirable to live on, but these properties have high values. People want to buy there and properties don't come on the market very often." In Worcester, Nicol & Co's top five most desirable locations include St George's Square, Britannia Square, Burlingham Square, Barbourne Terrace and Beach Avenue. But as Mr Westwood pointed out, the statistics show that properties do not come up for sale very often on these streets. The top five streets for property sales, according to Nicol & Co, are the Hill Avenue, Eltrick Road, Lawn Road, Grange Avenue and Battenhall Road. He said, "When properties come up for sale on these streets, they receive loads of interest and are snapped up quickly. These are the locations where we have sold recently and where the most demand is." Nicol & Co sold the most homes in Worcester and Droitwich in 2023 and at a faster rate, according to figures released by Rightmove. Nicol & Co has also been named the UK's Sales Agency of the Year in the Best Estate Agents Guide Award for 2024. Managing Director Matt Nicol launched the business in 2009 in Droitwich and now has offices in Worcester and Malvern as well. He said, "Our results speak for themselves and they come from a potent mix of modern marketing, understanding our local media and commitment from our staff to old-fashioned customer service and courtesy at all times, which we find is a winning formula."
A new accessible toilet has opened in Worcester city centre. The development in the Corn Market advances Worcester City Council's bid to make the city centre more inclusive. The Changing Places facility was financed by a government grant alongside council funding. It features a big, accessible toilet and includes ceiling track hoists, adult-sized changing benches and dedicated carer's space. The toilet is fully peninsular, offering abundant space on either side. This amenity is the third Changing Places toilet in the city, following existing units in the Hive and the University of Worcester St John's campus. More than 250,000 people in the UK, from those with profound and multiple learning disabilities to others with disabilities that limit mobility, struggle to use standard accessible toilets. The Corn Market car park was chosen due to its central location and nearby disabled parking spaces. Councillor Robin Norfolk, Member Champion for Equality, Diversity and Inclusion, said, "We know how vital it is for many people with disabilities and their carers to have access to a facility like this, and we hope to deliver more inclusive facilities as part of our commitment to ensuring Worcester is an accessible city for everyone." Carer Voice Team Lead for Worcestershire Association of Carers, WAC, Kate Webb, said, "We are pleased to support the launch of the new Changing Places. It is essential for families and carers accessing the community to have the appropriate facilities available to enable them to take care of their loved ones who cannot access a standard accessible toilet in a safe, clean and accessible environment. Changing places allows families to enjoy time together, because without such specialist facilities, taking trips and spending time together is limited. As it becomes increasingly difficult for carers to get a break, this can be a vital lifeline. It is even more important families and carers are enabled to remain part of their community.
Aspiring young writers have been invited to take part in Worcestershire's Young Poet Laureate competition. The contest, run by Worcestershire Libraries, Seven Arts and Public Health Worcestershire, is looking for young poets aged 10 to 18 to represent the county. Amelie Simon, the Young Poet Laureate 2023, spoke glowingly about competing in the competition last year. She said, "I never could have dreamt of getting up on a stage to read my own poetry, but I've discovered that the stage offers me a place to be authentically me and to have a great time doing it. I've met some of the most incredible people and found so much comfort in the art form." Participants need to submit a poem on the theme of change to enter the competition, which is divided into three age categories: school years 6 to 8, 9 to 11, and 11 to 13, and 12 to 13. The application deadline is at 5 p.m. on Monday, April 1st. Finalists will be invited to perform at the Hive in Worcester, where a winner from each group will be picked before one is crowned as the Young Poet Laureate 2024. Previous laureates have had their work published, performed live, and been interviewed on local radio and be called upon for commissioned projects. Jen Loffman, community producer at Seven Arts, said, "This year we really want to celebrate poetry in all its forms and would love to hear from songwriters, rappers and spoken word artists, as well as poetry writers." The contest final will take place at the Hive on Sunday, April the 28th.
This is an article from the Worcester Sports page on Thursday, March the 7th. Under the heading, "Happy to be back," the Pears legend Neil announced as a new county president. Worcestershire has announced a club legend and former captain as its new county president. The club has confirmed that Phil Neil, OBE, will succeed Cynthia Crawford, MBE, in the position for a two-year term from 2024 until 2026. The appointment process will be subjected to members' approval during the annual general meeting set to take place at the Graham Hick Pavilion on Wednesday, March the 27th. Neil has acquired lots of experience in a variety of cricket sectors since his Worcestershire debut at the end of 1975. During his decade-long captaincy, Worcestershire won two county championships, two Sunday leagues, the Benson and Hedges Cup, and Refuge Assurance Cup. Neil ended his illustrious career in 1992 with 17,445 runs in first-class cricket and 7,553 in listed A cricket, occupying the 11th and 5th spots in Worcestershire's all-time scorer list. Neil said, "I'm pleased to be back and contributing in any way I can, which is obviously with my cricket knowledge. I was particularly grateful during my time as captain to Don Kenyon when he was president for the support he gave me through the cricket committee. If I can do anything similar for the current cricket management to give some support on the cricket side, then I'm very happy to do that." Neil has said he is delighted to reunite with Worcestershire CEO Ashley Giles, whom he has known for a long time, having already previously collaborated was at Warwickshire and England. He said, "I've known Ash for a long time and I'm delighted with the way his career has progressed since he stopped playing. When he moved to Worcestershire, I was confident it would be a very good move for everybody. And from the reaction I'm getting from around the place, I think that is proving to be true."
And now the football news from Tuesday, March the 5th. Rivals Worcester City and Worcester Raiders will lock horns for a second time this evening as Clanes Lane gets set to welcome a sell-out crowd. The pair will clash for just a second time in a competitive fixture after City triumphed 1-0 at Six Ways in the first back in August, thanks to an early Liam Lockett stunner. Thousands were in attendance that day, and it will be the biggest crowd for a game at Clanes Lane on Tuesday, 1,400 capacity, as the two go head-to-head once more in the Hellenic Premier. City have not played since Tuesday night's Marsh Challenge Cup quarter-final win following the postponement of Friday night's league fixture at local rivals Pershore Town. But whilst they come into the game fresher than their opponents, Raiders are enjoying an end-of-season revival following what has been a turbulent campaign. Having been a team involved in the title discussion in the early months, the departure of long-term boss Carl Gormley sparked an exodus of players and a run of 12 defeats in their next 22 games. But they have enjoyed an end-of-season revival in the last couple of weeks. Raiders have won three of their last four, and a big part of their recent success has been down, in the main, to the goals of former City striker Zach Hussain. Having started the 2024 season with Chris Corns, Hussain made the move across Worcester and has been in five form of late, scoring five goals in his last four matches. He will be keen to return to Clanes on Tuesday and dent City's title hopes in what is quite extraordinarily Raiders' penultimate game of the season. Glenn Sitch's side only have one game left after the derby on Tuesday, while City still have 11 games to play. Part of that is due to their progress in the three cup competitions, but it has also to do with the amount of games that have been postponed. In the final 6 weeks of the campaign, City will be squeezing all those league matches in alongside the cup games. City host Emily on Saturday in the Isuzu FA Vars quarter-final and have a two-legged final in the Wiseman Lighting Floodlit Cup to come against Roman Glass St George in March. But whilst this derby is not going to be a top-of-the-table clash, City will be wary of Raiders coming to Clanes with a nothing-to-lose attitude. There will be no need for any added incentive for the league leaders, but they can set a new club record of consecutive victories if they beat their rivals. A 15th straight win in all competitions would beat the previous record set back in 1976-77. City team news. The hosts will be without defender Kirk Layton as he sits out the third of his three-match suspension following his red card against Longleven's striker Jamie Insall remains a doubt after injuring his foot during the FA Vars win at Stourport Swifts last month.
And the Netball Super League, Team Bath 44, Seven Stars 72. Seven Stars' perfect start to the Netball Super League season continued at the weekend as they stormed past Team Bath in impressive fashion to record a 72-44 win on the road. The Worcester-based franchise dominated the match from start to finish to take the win 44-72. With a perfect record so far this season, the team sit first on goal difference, equal with Manchester Thunder on 9 points. Head coach Jo Tripp said she was delighted with the win, the team's third victory in a row. It was another fantastic win, another game with all players playing their part on and off the court, which is absolutely brilliant, she said. We weren't as clinical as we have been in previous games. It was hot, the atmosphere was really electric, it was really loud, we were super fast, paced on court as well, so it's just us finding that balance between being fast and then taking a pause and being really clinical with the ball as well. I'm really happy with another big win and maintaining that top end of the table, which we're really looking to do. A solid start from Stars in the opening 15 minutes saw them draw away early to take an 8-goal lead, 10-18. Stars maintained their momentum into the second quarter and they extended their advantage by the half-time interval 37-22 ahead. The second half saw further defensive pressure from Stars, a franchise owned by the University of Worcester, leading to interceptions and conversions to goal, which helped to create an almost unassailable lead, 33-56. Tripp made some changes in the final quarter, bringing in Lefebvre Radman at goal attack, Rashley Decker at centre and Becca Airy at goalkeeper, meaning all 12 players took to the court. But despite the changes, the Stars would not be halted and in the end they managed to record a convincing 28-point win. Stars' next home game at the University of Worcester Arena is against Manchester Thunder on the 8th of March, but this match is already sold out.
And lastly, moving on to basketball. Worcester Wolves were made to sweat in the final quarter but held on to win a high-scoring affair against Teesside Lions at the University of Worcester Arena on Saturday night. Holding command at 87-63 entering the last quarter, Wolves looked to have the win in the bag but had to fend off a late comeback from their playoff-bound opponents to see out 103-90 success. Things got a bit dodgy towards the end, but I'm happy with the result, said coach Dean Blake. We've been getting off to slow starts all season, but today we came out with a really good attitude, got going straight away and carried on the momentum. For the most part, I'm really happy with our performance. We moved the ball well, lots of players got good court time, and we got the win against a good team. Worcester stalwarts Wilfred Santhe and Matai Baltino set their stall out for an evening of their own favourite moves. In classic fashion, Santhe dealt the ball to Baltino beneath the basket, who skipped round his defenders with ease. Santhe pulled up for a triple. Baltino stole possession for Santhe to set up Humberto Ferreira, and Santhe scored again for an early 16-7 lead. Pulsating on offence, Wolves swept 34-20 ahead entering the second period. Finn Rennie joined the attack to block a Teesside attack, take a layup and sink a double of three-pointers. Baltino persevered in tormenting the opposition to aid a 57-40 advantage as the first half wound down. However, Lions still held an ace in their pack in the form of Tom Horvat, 2019 National Basketball League Division II Player of the Year. The American playmaker connected from outside the perimeter as the interval buzzer sounded to finalise a stunning 23-point personal haul. While Horvat continued to dominate Teesside's output, Worcester were contrastingly able to profit from a wealth of options. Ferreira joined Baltino to control matters close to the hoop. Santhe persisted in pulling the strings, and Arian Davoudi thrust forward for a quick-fire 10 points. The hosts maximised their lead at 92-63 with 8 minutes of the evening remaining before their visitors fought back. Forcing a series of turnovers and riding on the back of a third three-pointer from young guard Noah Saar in under 5 minutes saw a resurgent Lions drag the gap back to just 93-84. Davoudi responded by notching his own third triple of the night to finally stop the rot, and when Santhe once more hit the target, calm was restored and victory secured. Wolves will round out this year's fixtures with a double-header weekend. First up is a trip to Manchester Magic next Saturday, March the 9th, tip-off 7 p.m., before returning to the University of Worcester Arena the following day, tip-off 5 p.m, for the season finale against Derbyshire Arrows.
And that is the end of our contribution for this week. Thank you very much for listening. The obituaries will follow the music. So until next time, goodbye. And now for the obituaries. Raymond Charles Pritchard, formerly of Royal Mail and Christian Salvelson, passed away in hospital on the 5th of February. Funeral service at Worcester Crematorium Chapel on Friday the 8th of March at 10:45, followed by interment at Astwood Cemetery. Flowers or donations, if desired, for Alzheimer's Research UK may be sent to E.J. Gummery & Son, Worcester, or a collection plate will be available at the Crematorium Chapel. Suzanne Judith Wagstaff, née Hedges, of Castle Morton, passed away suddenly on the 12th of February. A funeral service will be held on Wednesday the 6th of March at 12 noon at St Gregory's Church, Castle Morton. Family flowers only, but donations, if desired, to St Gregory's Church, Castle Morton. Leslie John Brooks, known as John, passed away on the 14th of February, formerly head teacher at Elbury Mount Junior School. The funeral will be held at the Vale Crematorium, Fladbury, on Thursday the 7th of March at 3 o'clock. Donations to Barnardo's. Irene Morgan passed away peacefully on the 14th of February. A funeral service at Worcester Crematorium on Wednesday the 6th of March. Family flowers only, please, for donations for Diabetes UK can be sent to E.J. Gummery & Son, Worcester. Diane Dorothy Atkinson, née Jones, passed away peacefully in hospital on the 18th of February. Funeral service at St Stephen's Church on Wednesday the 13th of March at 10:15 a.m, followed by an internment at Astwood Cemetery. Family flowers only, please, but donations, if desired, for Worcester Food Bank may be left on the collection plate at church or sent to E.J. Gummery & Sons, Worcester. Carol Ann Webb passed away suddenly on the 17th of February, Worcester Royal Hospital, aged 73. Her funeral will be held on the Thursday, 14th of March at 10:45 at Worcester Crematorium. Family flowers only, donations if desired to be gratefully received by the RSPCA. All inquiries to Co-op Funeral Care, Worcester.
Anne Marguerite Nicholson, née Williams, of Worcester, passed away suddenly at home on the 20th of February. Funeral service at Worcester Crematorium on Wednesday, 13th of March at 1:45 p.m. Family flowers only, please, but donations, if desired, for Midlands Air Ambulance may be left on the collection plate at the crematorium or sent to E.J. Gummery & Son, Worcester. Dawn Leslie Enon sadly passed away on the 21st of February. The funeral service will take place at Hereford Crematorium on Wednesday, 13th of March at 12:15 p.m. Family flowers only, please. Donations, if desired, for St Michael's Hospice, Hereford. Inquiries to Emma Boulston Funeral Services, 3 New Road, Bromyard. George Samuel William Jackson passed away on the 21st of February at Worcester Royal Hospital. Funeral will be held on Friday the 15th of March at 10:45 a.m. at Worcester Crematorium Chapel, followed by burial at Astwood Cemetery at 11:30. The family have asked if guests could wear something red on the day. Family flowers only. Donations, if so desired, to be gratefully received for the Alzheimer's Society. All inquiries to Co-op Funeral Care, Worcester. Mavis Gregory passed away peacefully on the 22nd of February. The funeral will take place at Worcester Crematorium on Wednesday the 20th of March at 11:30 a.m. Family flowers only, but donations welcome to Worcester Community Garden at the service or care of Co-op Funeral Care Worcester. Albert Gibbons. Albert's sadly passed away on the 26th of February 2024, peacefully. Will be sadly missed by all friends and family. Funeral will be held at Worcester Crematorium 14th of March at 1 p.m. Donations to Cancer Research UK. Arlene Preen, known as Janet, passed away peacefully on the 29th of February. Funeral is taking place on Thursday the 14th of March at 3:15 p.m. at Worcester Crematorium. Family flowers only, donations if so desired, will be gratefully received for Acorns Children's Hospice. All inquiries to Co-op Funeral Care Worcester. Derek Thomas Clifford Sandilands, 28th of December 1944 to 3rd of November 2023, will be buried in St John's Cemetery, Worcester, on Wednesday the 6th of March 2024 at 10 a.m. Inquiries to Worcester Funeral Service. We send our best wishes to the family and friends of the recently departed at this difficult time.